Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we unpack your sources to extract the most important nuggets of knowledge and insight. Today, we're embarking on, well, a truly fascinating journey into the mind of a singular filmgoer. We've been given this unique collection of their personal critiques, observations, and some incredibly strong opinions on recent films and the wider cinematic landscape.
Yeah, this is certainly not your typical movie review column, is it? Our mission here is really to delve into this highly individual perspective, try to understand what truly resonates with this reviewer, and maybe see what broader insights we can gain about how personal lenses shape our engagement with movies, with culture. You're going to hear about specific film critiques, some surprising genre theories, and even reflections on society, all through this very distinct viewpoint.
So let's dive into this stack of sources and see what kind of cinematic insights await us. This deep dive is definitely not your standard blockbuster. Okay, so first off, our reviewer immediately stands out with a very specific taste and a remarkably consistent rating system, like almost every movie, from Nosferatu 2024 to Death of a Unicorn, gets a rating of 7 XLRs out of 7 or 8 XLRs.
Right, the XLRs. It's an intriguing consistency, and when they say XLRs, you should probably think of it as a highly personal, almost abstract unit of, I don't know, pure enjoyment, or maybe visceral reaction. It's definitely not a conventional nuanced score. It kind of suggests their appreciation is captured by typical numerical ratings, or maybe, just maybe, their baseline for what they consider watchable is just exceptionally high.
We get a quick glimpse into their initial reactions, too. Films like Nosferatu, 2024. The vampire apparently did not look dry enough, which is specific. And Baby Girl, which prompted the, well, let's say direct question, why is Nicole Kidman still so hot?
Mm.
Right. But here's where it really gets interesting, I think. Their detailed take on flight risk.
Oh, yeah, the flight risk stuff. Their comparison to Con Air is quite telling, isn't it? Noting it felt like an 80s movie because nobody shuts the fuck up. Which, okay, this reviewer explicitly favors things falling apart over, say, big explosions. They're calling for a return to disaster schlock. And this preference really comes through with their enjoyment of Mark Wahlberg breaking his thumb, mutilating his hand, getting pummeled, flying out of a plane, being run over by an ambulance, all that stuff. They even mentioned their favorite part of Titanic is when the giant pipe crushes all the dudes.
Wow, okay. So it's clearly less about the big, clean explosions and much more about the visceral, chaotic destruction, like genuine physical punishment. This reveals a fascinating craving for authentic, tangible consequences in film, which feels like a stark contrast to the often sort of sanitized action we see today. It really makes you wonder what truly captivates this reviewer, and perhaps some other audiences too, in the action genre. Now, beyond specific plot points, these sources reveal a deep frustration. It's about the prevailing aesthetic of modern filmmaking, which our reviewer provocatively dubs A24-vision.
Ah, yes, A24-vision. This critique pops up repeatedly. In Flight Risk, they note, all movies look the same now, though. A24-vision, everything's all blurred out unless it's in direct focus. They seem to describe A24-vision as this ubiquitous, stylized visual palette, you know the look, often characterized by muted colors, shallow depth of field, a certain artistic moodiness. But they feel it's just become generic now. This concern comes back with Death of a Unicorn, when they criticize A24 shit that wastes potential for outright farce. They lament everything goes to waste on this altar of alt filmmaking.
Yeah.
And they even apply it to F1, just flat out stating every movie looks the same.
Right, and this individual seems to crave a return to physical comedy. Something like, straight Looney Tunes Ulmer Fudd, that's the quote, real slapstick. They strongly critique what they call movie-isms, or Marvel humor. Humor that is not subtle, doesn't exactly push the line of absurdity, apparently, and instead just segment scenes into a joke line rather than having a cohesive tone. This is a big downside for them in both Death of a Unicorn and Thunderbolts.
So if we broaden this out a bit, the reviewer seems to want more distinct visual styles, right? Less generic comedic approaches and a stronger embrace of specific genre conventions, even if that means going full-blown farce. And, you know, the homogenization of cinematic aesthetics, which this reviewer is really zeroing in on, maybe it is dulling our viewing experiences by eroding the unique visual identity of films. It's a fair point.
Okay, shifting gears a bit, our reviewer dedicates significant attention to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, particularly Captain America, Brave New World, and Thunderbolts. And they offer both praise and some pretty sharp criticism.
Yeah, they do give credit where it's due. They appreciate that Marvel has gotten really good at fight choreography and directing, apparently. And they're also easily appeased by superheroes going out of their way to save and defend civilians, emphasizing in all caps, it's what superheroes are supposed to do. So that's clearly a core expectation for them.
But the critiques are numerous. For Captain America, Brave New World, they really lament power creep. You know that thing in comics or games where characters just keep getting stronger, making old threats seem kind of weak?
Exactly, power creep.
They also criticize characters being in name only. The example is the Leader, who's apparently stripped of his powers, has a changed design, a Riddler core cadence.
Uh-huh, like the Batman villain.
Yeah, like a cryptic questioning speech pattern.
Yeah.
And he ends up stuck in the infinite cryptic villain in jail status. They even draw this surprising comparison between the Leader's motivations and the Master from the Fallout games.
Really? Fallout?
Yeah, noting the similar name, similar goals, and they find it surprising nobody else pointed it out.
Well, that really highlights a core tension for dedicated fans, doesn't it? When does reimagining a character go too far? When an iconic character becomes in name only, yeah, it can certainly alienate a fan base that values, you know, fidelity to the source material or established arcs. They also criticize the MCU for becoming progressively more violent and murder-happy, while still always ending optimistically, suggesting maybe a lack of genre play beyond villain-of-the-week popcorn-munching-tier shit. Their words, not mine.
And then in Thunderbolts, they express disappointment over a double-dot subversion, like a twist on a twist, essentially.
Okay.
Where the real Taskmaster is apparently called off early, which leads them to speculate about maybe using alternate universe characters to make up for butchered ones.
Yeah.
They also dislike the change to Sentry's character, preferring when dynamic flaws are explored rather than, you know, agency being taken away.
Right. It all suggests a really strong desire for deeper character development, I think, and a willingness to explore actual consequences within these superhero narratives, rather than just relying on formulaic elements or convenient plot devices all the time. It really speaks to the expectations of a, well, a pretty discerning audience member.
Then our sources present some fascinating, if maybe unconventional, genre analysis. The reviewer actually coins a term, the post-slasher.
The post-slasher. Okay, tell me more. Well, according to them, this new genre is centered around killers trying to kill one particular person and incidentally just killing other people along the way.
Mm-hmm.
It apparently incorporates the final girl element of typical slashers from the very start. They cite You're Next from 2011 as an example that's been steadily gaining traction, and their theory for why this shift happened.
Get this. So someone can make quips.
Huh. Okay. Quips.
And building on observations from Captain America, Brave New World, Companion, and Baby Girl, this reviewer identifies another new stock character, the fake feminist female Machiavellian.
Wow. Okay. That's a mouthful.
Right. They suggest this is an A24 running commentary that has now been picked up by bigger corporate studios like Marvel.
And the reviewers claim here, it gets a bit complex, they say this character is incidentally tied to criticisms of real-world political figures, and that large corporations, maybe in attempting to reflect social critique, are actually embodying the macrocosm of the dynamic they're portraying, showing how reflexive and transparently Machiavellian all remotely mainstream forms of social critique are.
Mm.
Now, just to be clear, for everyone listening, we're simply conveying the observations present in the source material here. We're not endorsing or taking a stance on the specific viewpoints expressed.
Right. And beyond these specific character types, the reviewer's lens often seems to magnify how cinematic trends ripple out into broader cultural and sometimes politically charged observations. For instance, they talk about how Tesla's apparently went from a big city hipster thing to a right-wing dog whistle because of Elon Musk, or how nuclear power is perceived as bad because of its association with past political figures, despite, you know, current climate concerns.
These observations really illustrate a tendency within the source material to connect seemingly disparate cultural phenomena, tying them back to underlying societal and political dynamics. It definitely encourages critical thinking about how narratives, even in popular entertainment, can reflect or maybe even inadvertently perpetuate broader cultural discussions.
Okay, let's turn to Final Destination, Bloodlines. Here, the reviewer offers this deeply personal connection to the horror genre. They state, Final Destination speaks to me in a way that most horror doesn't, because it's essentially just a GAD ghost.
A GAD ghost. Interesting phrasing. They elaborate that the, you know, the omnipresent, arbitrary system of death in Final Destination, it mirrors an omnipresent system punishing me for my existence. So when they say GAD ghost, they seem to be connecting it to generalized anxiety disorder, suggesting the film's premise resonates with that feeling of an omnipresent, arbitrary threat, much like anxiety itself can feel.
It's a really fascinating way to personalize horror, isn't it? Seeing it as a recontextualization of deeper anxieties, like those random thoughts of dying in public manifesting as broader anxiety.
And while they appreciate the series' core premise, there is no escape. respect nature, except the life-denying Geist. They criticize Bloodlines specifically for new movieism.
New movieisms.
Yeah.
Like new cliches.
Yeah, exactly. New cinematic trends or cliches. Things like less complex, less frequent, and less visceral deaths that lack squish and crunch. That's important to them. They lament the film favoring plot with a trademark symbol, suggesting maybe forced plot mechanics.
And insignificant family drama instead of the core concept. They are particularly annoyed by the reveal that Tony Todd's character is just a guy with cancer, finding that it really undermines the whole mystique of death itself in the series.
And that's a crucial point, I think. When a film, maybe by revealing too much or simplifying its core concept, it risks alienating a dedicated audience that connects on a deeper, almost existential level. It touches on how the abstract and the mysterious can sometimes be way more compelling than concrete explanations, you know?
And interestingly, this deep personal connection to Final Destination seems to open up a much broader philosophical channel for the reviewer. It leads them to this provocative critique about, well, about language itself.
Language. How do they get there? They express concern that if a baby's first word is phone, something is seriously wrong. Their core argument seems to be that children are learning to think structurally at the cost of assigning actual meaning, which leads to signs without meaning and potentially a generation of the disenchanted due to an excess of language.
Wow. That's a powerful and undeniably thought-provoking observation.
Yeah.
Heavy stuff. It really compels us to consider the potential long-term effects of our, information-saturated world, effects on cognitive development, and maybe the very nature of meaning itself. Okay, the sources also give us a look into other diverse film experiences, each with its own peculiar insights. For instance, the reviewer's take on the new Superman film is pretty unique, calling it a weird, smurfing movie that somehow balances schmaltzy and comical with dark, dark shit.
Yeah. That sounds like a tricky balance. They do highlight a really good portrayal of Lex Luthor, apparently, whose pettiness and egomania are matched by his utilitarianism, making him a threat to everyone. And the film also does address the hero question that Watchmen put forward decades ago, which the reviewer finds commendable. You know, that classic question, should a superpowered individual interfere with humanity's self-determination, even if it's for the greater good?
Right, that fundamental dilemma. And then there's F1. Bit different. The reviewer's mom apparently likes racing movies despite hating Loud Things, which props this personal reflection from the reviewer on their own inexplicable attraction to fast vehicles despite a fear of driving. It's those little personal quirks, isn't it, that shape how we view art?
Absolutely. And they also humorously admit the film taught them the incredibly obvious fact that competitive racing involves manual mechanical adjustments beyond just steering, which, fair enough. What's fascinating here is how these personal observations just weave through every single film review. It really illustrates how our individual histories and quirks filter our perceptions of entertainment.
And throughout all these films, our reviewer also offers a variety of specific cultural and racial observations, just things they notice, noting details like the portrayal of Indians in Flight Risk and Companion, the prevalence of Asian American actors post-COVID in Final Destination, Bloodlines, the Israeli gnome woman in Captain America, the Aryan appearance of Lex Luthor compared to others in Superman, and the sheer number of British people in F1.
Yeah, these are presented by the reviewer as perceived patterns within contemporary cinema. It reflects their very candid, unfiltered engagement with popular culture. And again, just to reiterate, we are simply conveying the ideas and observations present in the source material. We're not endorsing or taking any stance on the viewpoints expressed therein.
Right. So what an incredible deep dive this has been into one person's incredibly unique, often idiosyncratic, and always entertaining perspective on modern cinema. We've seen this blend of sharp film criticism, bold genre theories, and even some, profound cultural commentary.
Indeed. This collection of sources really reminds us that criticism isn't just about objectivity, is it? It's so much about how deeply personal experiences, anxieties, even pet peeves can shape our reception of art. And that consistent 7XLRs rating, it kind of becomes a statement in itself. Perhaps suggesting that for this reviewer, the experience of watching a film is less about a numerical score and more about the raw, visceral impact, whether positive or negative, that it leaves behind.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Well, perhaps it's an invitation to develop your own unique cinematic wisdom, your own internal rating system. The next time you watch a movie, maybe consider, what's your internal XLR rating, if you had one? What deep-seated preferences are shaping your enjoyment, and what unexpected cultural observations might you make that maybe others miss?
Yeah, this deep dive has truly shown us the rich tapestry of insight that can be woven from even the most, shall we say, unconventional sources.
Thank you so much for joining us on the deep dive. We hope this exploration has given you plenty to mull over until our next deep dive.